Good morning. Welcome to those who are joining us for this part of our Sesshin. I will be speaking a fair amount in the first part of my talk about Sesshin. And those of you who are coming for a portion of today, please know that while you are here, you are in Sesshin. So you might consider whatever I say to those who are here all day or full time. You might consider these are also instructions for you because you're here. And I did just want to say one thing. I mean, I could talk every talk I ever give about the chant that we just chanted. However, I won't, because I actually want to talk about some other things. But I do want to just say that this line in here about how Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we in the future shall be Buddhas and ancestors, revering Buddhas and ancestors, we are one Buddha and one ancestor. I just have to say that, I mean, I've sat in this seat many times to give Dharma talks, but this is the first time I'm leading a Sesshin, and it is so humbling to be in this seat, to be in the Dokusan room, sitting at that table there, looking at Catherine, knowing that she used to do that the period before lecture. She would be in that room with that table preparing for lecture. And this is the heart of our practice, is this warm hand to warm hand passing on of this tradition through our very bodies and our very lives and our very minds. So I just feel tremendous gratitude, as always, for our teaching and this particular intimacy that we have of how it gets passed on person to person. So gratitude to my root teacher, Catherine, and gratitude to my transmission teacher, Patrick, which is both of whom actually made it possible for me to be sitting in this seat. And just so you know, to demystify this strange title. So if you know what it means, it helps. Ehe, that's Dogen. Ehe Dogen, that was his first name. So this is actually Ehe, and Koso Hotsugan Mon, Gan is vow. That's the first part of my name, Myoka Ganmon. That's my Dharma name, Bright Song, fulfilling vow, Ganmon. Ganmon is vow fulfilling. So this is, and I can't tell you right now all the, you know, specific meaning of the other syllables, though, you know, that would be part of another talk. But basically what this means is this is the instruction that Ehe Dogen wrote to encourage us to arouse vow. So when you're feeling kind of lethargic, or, oh my God, I don't know, am I doing this right? When am I, you know? This is his encouragement. So it's Ehe's vow arousing chant. That's literally what this title means. So when we think about, let's all say it together. Ehe Koso Hotsu Gan Mon. And I think if we remember that gan in that long word, it's a way to kind of navigate our way through the length of it. And again, remembering this is Ehe's chant to arouse vow, to encourage us in our practice. So one of the things Catherine used to say to me, she probably said it publicly, but I remember her saying it, was that the practice of Sesshin is a lot about becoming one body. Becoming one body. We are separate. We have separate bodies. We have skin that separates from each other. And yet in Sesshin, we're so close. We're not looking at each other. We're not touching. We're not talking. But we are breathing together all day long. We're aware of each other's movements. We hear each other's sounds or silence. We're interacting non-verbally in the structure of these forms that Zen creates for us to practice within. And so we are invited to settle into this relationship with each other, and by doing so, we actually become one body. It happens just by the moment-by-moment actualization, or genjo. That's what genjo means, moment-by-moment actualization. It happens by that, even if nothing changed from, you know, we had a morning so far together. It was perfect. It was our genjo. It was our moment-by-moment awakening with each other. And, as Suzuki Roshi famously said, you are perfect just the way you are, and you could use a little improvement. And this is our Zen way, as we put ourselves into these complex and seemingly picky, strange activities together. It's like a dance. Raise your hand if you've ever done any kind of dancing. Okay, so you know, there's like hippie dancing where you just dance by yourself. Rainbow Child, Grateful Dead, you know, we're like, I'm in my own thing. Some ecstatic dances like that. Awesome, great, I love it. There's also dance where we interact with others, where there's steps and patterns. And some of them are simple and some of them are hard. And if you go to the fun social dancing they have at the Grange, I think they call it, what do they call it? We went one time, Laurie, remember? What was that called? It had a name. Circle dancing? Contra dancing, right. If you go contra dancing, it starts really simple. you know, the first dance, you think, wow, I'm doing pretty good. And they have this beautiful habit that the experienced dancers, the first couple of dances, they go pick the beginners. So there you are, you're a beginner, and you're with somebody who is super confident in their body and in the move. So you get this lovely initiation, like, oh, I can do this. But then as the evening goes on, it gets more and more complicated, and they start having a lot of fun together, and you're like, wow. So I think Sasheen is a little bit like that, too. We have service, and we have Orioki. Orioki is kind of one of our big dances that we do. You know, so many things that it seems like we're supposed to remember. So how do we do this dance? Becoming one body and balancing this practice where, on the one hand, you're perfect and it's perfect, just the way it is. And on the other hand, we're always making improvement to help us wake up. To help us notice, oh, where are my edges? What's me? What's other? How attentive am I being to the field? Am I just in my own head thinking about my job, looking good? What am I supposed to be doing? Yeah, you should do a little bit of that, but it's just as important to extend your field of perception to the beings in the room, the relationship. What are the others doing? This is a big, big, big part of our waking up, especially, like, for example, I'm going to use the Orioki form as a model because we just did it. And okay, Orioki is a Japanese word which we inherited in our Zen form, and it's a very ritualized way of eating. We have these bowls, and we have a particular way that we lay them out. We have a particular way that we receive our food. We have chants. We have a particular way we clean it. We have a particular way we fold it back up. And everybody's doing this choreography of this dance. And we're all making mistakes all the time. Raise your hand if you made some kind of mistake that you were aware of during breakfast this morning. Awesome. Good. Good. I think everybody. Hey. Welcome to the human race. However, if you notice and you're aware of your mistake, then next time you can practice
making another one.
True. You can also practice trying to not do that mistake. That's called learning. And noticing is called arousing practice. And acknowledging your mistake is called confessing and repenting. And that, my friends, is the way of the Buddhas. It's not just funky little practitioners who don't quite know how to do perfect orioki who confess and repent their mistakes. That's what Buddhas do. Let me read this to you and imagine that what I'm reading about now when I'm talking about confessing and repenting is just this fact of noticing what we're doing and aligning ourselves with our intention and our vow. Repenting in this way, and by repenting again, we don't mean, you know, you're on your knees, oh my God, I made a mistake. It's more just like, oops, sorry, I realize I forgot to do that, I'll do it differently next time, right? Which you're doing mostly inside your own head. Repenting in this way, one never fails to reveal profound help from all Buddhas and ancestors. They've got your back, because they did it too. You think all of them knew how to do perfect orioki? By revealing and disclosing our lack of faith and practice before the Buddha, we melt away the root of transgressions by the power of our repentance. This is the pure and simple color of true practice, of the true mind of faith, of the true body of faith. So this paying attention to that which is outside of our individual self-concern is, in my view, increasingly, I think, one of the most important ways that we can wake up and learn how to become one body. One of the ways we do that in Sesshin is through our silence. Our little mind is not silent. It likes to talk. So by maintaining silence, this is from our guidelines, maintain silence throughout all activities. If communication is necessary, do so with a written note to the Eno or work leader. If you must speak with the Eno, go to a place where you can't be heard by others and speak in a quiet whisper. Make an effort to focus on your own body and mind, refraining from making eye contact with others. So again, this seeming paradox, I'm saying on the one hand, we're paying attention to each other. We're paying attention to the field outside of our own little mind. But we're not engaging in discursive talking, thinking with each other. This is the profound gift we can give each other by making this effort to come here and do this difficult practice where we sit for long hours and we get tired together. The gift, the fruit of Sesshin is the silence that we can create together and only together. It's literally something we are making up and creating for each other. So please be aware, and I'm saying this to you as a person, as you know, who loves to talk,
and loves to think and loves to, you know, loves this and loves this. If we can give ourselves the gift of silence, both outside and inside, what a blessing. And that includes also, if we can remember, refrain from reading, writing, photography, or it says telephone calls. Nowadays I'd say checking your personal communication device in order to experience the simplicity of the present. Of course, if an emergency comes up, you know, tell the Eno, or if you really need something, you know, because the other side here is, the Eno and I are both completely committed to your well-being. We want everybody here to take care of themselves and to be in communication with the Eno if you need an adaptation. And again, there's that edge, because on the one hand, it's inherently an uncomfortable practice. You don't come to Sesshin to relax and chill out. That's the funny thing when people say, oh, you're going to your Zen retreat. Wow, that must be so relaxing and so calm. And if you've been to one, you just chuckle inside because you go, well, it can be. It can be. And there will be, maybe there's already been for you today, moments when that silence and there's no thought. And there's no talking. So it's possible. And yet, it takes some effort. Shohaku, in this wonderful book that he wrote about the Mountains and Waters Sutra, if you get that book and read it, he has these wonderful little essays that are stuck throughout the book. And here's one that's on a commentary from the 15th verse. I don't even know what the 15th verse was. I just wrote down the commentary because it's about this very thing, about thinking and thoughts, which is one of the biggest pieces of what we have to work with when we're making this effort together to be still, silent, and serene. He says, some people think that when we eliminate all thought and experience enlightenment, we are liberated. We don't have to do anything else, and we can be happy for the rest of our lives. Have any of you ever had that thought? I have. And then, of course, we get frustrated, don't we? Wait a minute. I thought I was enlightened. He says, I think this is a misunderstanding or even a superstition. Dogen tried to caution his students that the point is to let go of thoughts and just be as you are. So it's not about eliminating thought. It's about letting go of thought and being with what's happening. The way he describes that he's learned over time to do this during Zazen, which he says he's been practicing for 40 years and has experienced many, many, many different conditions during his Zazen practice. He says, sometimes I have the experience of no thought, of simply being there. It was very pleasant. But, you know, sometimes my mind is busy and distracted. And that's part of my Zazen. When my mind is busy, I try to sit upright and breathe deeply and smoothly. And when I find I am interacting with my thoughts, I try to let them go. And he uses the analogy of the clouds in the blue sky, which of course is a beautiful analogy from the mountains and the waters that can help us with this practice of, because, you know, we see that in nature. Oh yeah, the clouds come and they go. And sometimes they gather, and sometimes they get really stormy, and then the storm rains, it dissipates, and then there's the blue sky again. Oh yeah, right. We accept it in nature. No different up here. Can we accept that same organic process as part of our own human experience? So, I'll say one more thing about Oriyoki, and I'll move on. So again, on the one hand, you know, yes, learn your role as best you can. Try to be perfect. You know, try to learn that stuff. Okay, or at least one thing. Okay, next time I do it, I'm going to work on remembering that. That's great. And same when you're practicing. Oh, I'm going to remember to keep my eyes open, to remember that I need to have my hands like this when the servers come, rather than just being like, wah, wah, wah. Oh, well, there they are, right? It's like, anticipate their arrival. But it's, I want to encourage the spirit of, it's not so that you can be good and look good and be perfect. Mommy's perfect little girl and boy, you know, aren't I so good? Good Zen student, you know, we can get into that. It's kind of, gets kind of ridiculous sometimes. But we do, because we're human and we want to be good. But if you could rather, as you're doing your best to practice, realize that there's two things that are the most important thing about Oriyoki. And the first one is that it's the practice of giver, receiver, and gift. And that's what we say in our meal chant. May we all realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. That's why it's in the meal chant, because it's offering us this understanding that that's really what we're doing. The soku and the servers get to give. The tenzo has given to us. Oh, there she is. I was going to say, where's the tenzo? Yeah, the tenzo has been giving, the food is giving to us, this gift, right? The people who grew the food, she's in there cooking. She brings it out. The servers bring it to us. They offer it. So there's the giver. But if there were no receivers, what would happen to all that food? You know, you have to run downtown and find somebody to give it to, right? So the giver and the receiver are co-creating this relationship. We need both. And, of course, the gift is the food, the experience. So may we realize the emptiness of the three wheels. None of these exists separately. That's what we mean by emptiness. Whenever you hear that word in Zen, that's what it means. It means empty of separate self. So the giver does not exist separate from the receiver, does not exist separate from the gift. The wheel, giver, receiver, and gift. That's the most important thing when we're eating together. So even if, like one time when I was at the monastery and I was on a serving crew, and in our very first meal that we had, one of the servers, as he was getting ready to serve the soup to the most highly ranked person in the room, the soup went flying and the whole bowl of lentil soup went jettisoning into the screen door. So the lentils wedged themselves into the screen. Can you imagine that moment? That's the emptiness of the three wheels too. And guess who was probably the most gracious person in the room about that whole thing? The highest ranked person in the room. Because they knew. They've been there. If they've gotten to be the most highest ranked person in the room, you can imagine they have thrown lots of lentil soup around. And the other thing that's the second most important thing, or maybe the concurrently existing first most important thing about why we and what we need to focus on in our Oriyoki. And I was reminded of this by the Eno when we were meeting before today and planning, as she reminded, it's please appreciate your meal. Please appreciate this meal. So those are the most important instructions. And everything else is just kind of the steps to help us get to this dance together. So to complete this little piece about silence, I wanted to just read a bit from, I have several favorite Zen masters. Of course, one of them is Dogen. And another one is Ikkyu, who was a 15th century Zen master, not in our direct lineage, but he practiced with many of the people who practice with our ancestors. He was a poet, among other things. And I'll read a few of his poems. This is something that he said about silence. They're very short, so I'll read it twice, because you might be here and go, oh my God, it's over already. What did it say? So I'll read it twice. He says, flowers are silent. Silence is silent. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Flowers are silent. Silence is silent. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Another way I want to practice creating silence together during this sesshin, these 3 days, is to not have discussion during lecture. This is actually a traditional form where the teacher offers the teaching and that's it. So I want to do that today and tomorrow so that we can go as deeply as we can without having to come up to formulate words and thoughts and concepts. And on the last day, Sunday, we'll have some engagement with each other, because that's the other side of practice that I think is very important. But I want to do that after we've established a real deep foundation of shared silence. So one question that I think it occurs to me sometimes, which is, if we're not paying attention to the little voice in our mind, which is what we're usually paying attention to, and which has the effect of giving us a lot of security, because we don't have to worry about so much what's going on out there, because we're so caught up with what's going on in here. So if we're actually dialing down the internal dialogue and quieting it down, what are we paying attention to? Now, in other schools of Buddhism, they're very helpful and they give you other things to pay attention to. Practices, deities, gates, steps. And if you were hoping that I'm now going to do that, I'm sorry, this is a Zen temple. Sometimes we do anyhow. But traditionally, we don't. So there you are, kind of hanging, swinging, aimlessly in the void, wondering, uh-oh, is this okay? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. One thing that Shohaku said, also in Mountains and Rivers, is he said that when we are able to let go of thought, there is still a mind, but it's the mind of Buddha, which is called prajna. Shohaku says, somehow, you know, from the bottom of our beings, we know that the mountain is moving. That's a metaphor we've been using in our class. We know that reality is just unfolding in this moment by moment actualization, genjo. Small mind doesn't want to believe it. Small mind wants it to be about its drama and its projections and its interpretations. But actually, if we're dialing down that mind and we're saying, it's okay, relax, honey, tucking it in, covering it up, giving it some cocoa, let it just chill out. And then we're curious now about, well, what, if I'm not being driven by that, what else is possible? Chohaku's saying, this way of knowing that is sometimes called the Dharma eye, or Buddha's wisdom, or prajna, he said, it's not a certain way of using our brains. It is what's there when I let go of my thought. It's actually the mind that is perceiving directly this genjo, this moment-by-moment actualization. And if you think, oh, what is that? Tell me, teacher, tell me. I would say, sit and find out for yourself. As Shohaku says, Zazen itself is Buddha's wisdom, but when I try to explain this, it becomes a concept made by humans, and then it's not reality anymore. To really see with this eye of wisdom, you have to practice. This is why we do this. I'm a woman of black books. More and more, the older I get. It's totally out of control now. I used to just have one journal. Now I've got like five. But hey, it's fun. And I'm into having fun, so there you go. I've been experimenting with this a lot as I've been studying mountains and waters, this idea of what is it that we pay attention to if we're not paying attention to the discursive mind? And if just hanging out in the void is a little bit too unsettling? Well, I think that one of the things we can do is we can, as Dogen offers in The Mountains and Waters, some of the metaphors that he uses, we can pay attention to that which is flowing outside. So in the Oryoki example, it would be paying attention to the movement of the others in the room. Or it might be, if you're outside, paying attention to what are the beings that are out there? What is the quality of the air? What are the sounds? This is also a way to invite us out of this grasping, our discursive mind, is to just open to attending to that which flows through us. Dogen called this, in The Mountains and Waters, riding clouds and following wind. What might that mean, to ride the clouds and follow the wind? I think this is inviting us to consider our interconnection. How do we exist in relation to all the myriad things? Did you know Dogen wrote poetry? I wanted to honor my root teacher, Catherine, by including poetry in my talks, because she always did. And for me, that was a beautiful kind of practice, because poetry kind of works with Sashin mind. You know, it's a little bit less, it's not like an essay where it's got its points that all logically fit together. Poetry comes from the experience of the present moment and our awareness of other and interconnection. So it's a nice language for Sashin. And so I realized and remembered and went and looked at, there's some nice poems in the back of Moon in a Dewdrop that Dogen wrote. And I think this is him here writing about this practice I just was mentioning of attending to what's happening out there. What are the beings of the place? What's the flow that's coming through me? So this is a poem he wrote. Evening Zazen hours advance. Sleep hasn't come yet. More and more I realize mountain forests are good for efforts in the way. Sounds of the valley brook enter the ears. Moonlight pierces the eyes. Outside this, not one further instant of thought. So as your Zazen hours advance today, perhaps you can tune in to the valley brook sounds of this place, to the moonlight or other things that may pierce your eyes today and tonight. And perhaps that will help us with our thinking habit. So to close again with EQ. Kind of on the same theme. A few. Three. October wind crosses the world. In this field, moist grass bends to itself and to the sea. October wind crosses the world. In this field, moist grass bends to itself and to the sea. Long life, the wild pines want it too. So, in a moment, we'll chant the Bodhisattva vows to complete our lecture time. And there will be a 20-minute period for walking. And I strongly encourage you to do that outside. It's a very beautiful day. And please, for this period, it's a longer period. It's not called Kinhin. So I invite you to experiment outside of our usual walking in a circle form that we do, and let yourself walk around in the garden. And if you want to walk around the front of the Zendo, please don't go to the park or down to look at town, because you have to keep your ear tuned. The Doan will just stand outside on the patio and ring the bell. So you want to be in hearing distance of the bell. And for different ones of us, that is different proximities. But please, it's even okay to look up if you want. And notice the beings of the place. Notice the relationships that are happening as we're sitting in the Zendo. allow that to penetrate you, and maybe then in the rest of the day you can sit here but also be aware of knowing a little bit more intimately what's the environment that is supporting our practice here today. So we will walk together outside. You can do it slow Zen style. You could do it a little faster. It's sort of some of the other traditions have a slightly faster style, but please keep it meditative. So it's not like taking a walk and getting exercise. It's about, you know, paying attention to your breath and remaining still, you know, silent and awake, but a little bit more movement and interaction with the world. And then we'll come back in the Zendo for our period of Zazen before service and lunch. So may these words that I have offered and the words of ancestors and friends, I sincerely hope that it is encouraging for your practice here. I have a deep gratitude and appreciation for everybody showing up and creating this experience together, this ancient Zen ceremony called Sesshin. Beings are numberless. I bow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I bow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.